Well, as some, if not many of you know, last week I was in North Wales on a study week, and I was with Stephen Rees, who's a good friend of Gerard's, has known him for many years, and together we studied the book of Ecclesiastes. And I'll say at the outset, I think probably the book of Ecclesiastes is one of the hardest books to understand in the Bible in many ways, and therefore it's one of the hardest to speak on. But tonight, I want us to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and simply look at the first 11 verses and just try to draw out of it just one or two things, really. So if you want to turn to Ecclesiastes and chapter 1, and we're going to read the first 11 verses. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labour in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away, and another generation comes. But the earth abides forever. The sun also rises, and the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes towards the south, and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually, and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labour. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. Okay, so the first 11 verses of Ecclesiastes. And before we kind of get into what these 11 verses are saying, I think we should probably just try and understand something of what Ecclesiastes is about, although many people differ on what they believe Ecclesiastes is about, mind you. I would suggest to you that Ecclesiastes really does show the limits of man's wisdom and of man's common sense. It shows what a man can understand without reference to the revealed, knowable God of the Bible. Okay? That's why we're forever reading throughout the book the phrase under the sun. Because throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, the writer Solomon is showing us man's point of view under the sun, without reference to the revealed, knowable God of the Bible. And as we go through the book, we find where philosophy and man's wisdom ultimately leads. Ultimately, it leads to dead ends. It often leads to pessimism. And it leads to a general sense that life is ultimately pointless. If this world is viewed simply under the sun, without reference to the God of the Bible who's revealed himself, life appears absolutely pointless. And that's why Solomon begins this book with this statement of despair, really. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And he doesn't just say it here, he says it in chapter 12 and verse 8. And he's showing that everything in between is really to say that life viewed under the sun is vanity. But what is vanity? Well, literally it means something that passes. Steam or wind or something like that. But it carries much more sense than that. It really carries a sense of emptiness. Unsatisfactory. Even the sense of frustration. It's a word which is packed full of meaning. The NIV translates it meaningless. But even that doesn't really hit the nail on the head. What Solomon is saying with this word vanity, he's really summing up the frustration that we feel over the pointlessness of life if we view this world under the sun. And he doesn't simply say vanity, he says vanity of vanities. And that points to the fact that viewed under the sun, this world is totally vanity. If you think of that phrase, vanity of vanities, it reminds us of holy of holies, doesn't it? It's a Hebrew way of saying that something is the holy of holies, is the holiest of all. It's totally holy, it's completely holy. It's a way of emphasizing the point. So Solomon says, vanity of vanities. If we view this world under the sun, it's completely vain. It's completely pointless, and it's frustratingly so. And then he begins to look at the world around him. Look at verses 3 and 4. He says, what profit has a man from all his labour in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away, and another generation comes. But the earth abides forever. So what profit is there if a man works hard all his life and endures the painful toil of this life, if in the end he will simply die and be replaced by someone else? I don't know whether you've ever seen or read Shakespeare's poem, All the World's a Stage. Shakespeare likens a man's life to a play. Well, in a sense, if we just use our imaginations here, we could really liken what Solomon is saying to a play, couldn't we? We could liken what he's saying about the human race to being like a play. You've got the stage before you, and enter stage left, one generation. And they work hard, and they endure the painful toil of life, and then they exit stage right. And immediately stage left comes in another generation, and they do the same, and they leave. And another generation comes in, and they do the same. And the actors are constantly changing. One generation is passing away, and it's being replaced by another. But the stage stays the same. Solomon looks at the world and it seems so fixed, it seems like it's always there. And yet, generations are coming and going while the earth abides forever. And yet, even as he looks at the earth, it seems reasonably pointless. Look at verses 5, 6 and 7. Verse 5, he says, the sun goes round in circles. Verse 6, the wind goes round in circles. Verse 7, the water goes round in circles. He looks at the world, this world which is which abides forever, this world which is always here. And he says, it just seems like it's going round in circles. And so actually, if we want to understand the Ecclesiastes chapter 1, it's useful if we think in circles, actually. He's saying everything's going round in circles. Generations are coming and going, they're going round in circles. This world, the sun is going round in circles, the wind is going round in circles, water's going round in circles. Everything is going round in circles. But look at the point he is making in this. He's saying the world is always here, but it's just going around in circles. It seems utterly pointless, doesn't it? It's like a car engine, which isn't attached to any wheels. And I don't know much about engines, but I know that if an engine's running, the pistons are going up and down, aren't they? And there's something called a cam belt, I think. Something along those lines. And that's running round, and there's probably other things that are going round and round and round. But it's not going anywhere. It's just sitting there, going, brimming away, going round and round. It's not going anywhere. And that's the sense that Solomon is talking about the earth. He says it's not going anywhere. It abides forever. But it's just going round in circles. And as he looks at this, we see in verse 8, as he looks at this, he sees that it's just tedious. Verse 8, we read, all things are full of labour. Other translations say, all things are wearisome. As he looks at this unmoving engine called the world, he just finds it tedious and tiring and exhausting. And the longer he looks at this life viewed under the sun, the more tedious and unsatisfying it becomes. He says, the eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The more he examines it, the more he looks at it all, it just seems completely unsatisfactory. So he looks at the world and this is what he says. And then he turns his eyes to look at humanity. He looks at human experience and human history. And if he's seen that the world seems to be going round in circles, well, when he looks at humanity, it doesn't seem any better, does it? He sees that history just keeps on repeating itself. Look at verse 9. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. He's saying history just keeps on repeating itself. Everything is going round in circles. Empires rise, empires fall, and another empire comes again. People live, people die, people fall in love, people fall out of love. Everything is just going round in circles, and history is repeating itself. And he says, verse 10, forget trying to find anything that appears new. Anything that actually appears new is just novel. It's just a repetition of what's gone on in the past. Human experience remains the same. Human nature remains the same. Anything which people appear to achieve, anything that people appear to do in this life is just a repetition of the past. It's just human beings acting the way they've always acted. Human experience doesn't really change, he says. And this is ultimately seen in the cycle of living and dying. And that's what he brings us to in verse 11. He says, there is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. He says, you live, you die, and you're forgotten. And even those people who come after you, when they're dead, no one will remember them either. It's a reasonably bleak picture he's painting, but actually, in many ways, it's true, isn't it? I'm going to do a little straw poll here. Put your hand up if you've ever heard of King Edgar. You can put your hand up, Ruth. It's okay. Ruth's half and half. Everyone else has forgotten him. She used to have a poster of King Edgar. It must have been an old poster. King Edgar lived 1,000 years ago. The only reason I know about him is I've got an app on my phone, which is an app about the kings of England. King Edgar ruled England 1,000 years ago. He was the top man in all of England, wasn't he? But now, I ask you, who can remember King Edgar? And no one puts their hand up apart from Ruth, who had a poster. No one can remember him. And therefore, Solomon is right in what he's saying here in many ways, isn't he? We live, we die, and we're forgotten. And that's quite sobering, really. And as Solomon looks at the world, this world viewed under the sun, just going round in circles, nature's going round in circles, human experience and history's repeating itself and it's going round in circles. As Solomon looks at it all from under the sun, he's just saying life's pointless. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. It's frustrating, it's pointless, it's meaningless. And I think, if I can say this, I think we can enter into something of Solomon's frustration, can't we? Because this world does go round in circles. Our lives go round in circles. You've maybe been at work this week, and you got into work Monday morning, and there was a lot of paperwork on your desk. And you've been working through it. And I don't know how far you are through it, but maybe you're halfway. It's Wednesday after all. And maybe you hope that by Friday you'll have your week's work done. But you'll come back on Monday, and there'll be a whole load more work to do. And it often seems like we're just going round in circles, doesn't it? Speaking to a housewife I know, she said that the most frustrating thing she ever experiences is cleaning the house. Because you clean the dishes only for them to get dirty again. You wash the clothes only for the clothes to get dirty again. You work so hard to get the house to look nice, and then give it 10 minutes with a couple of kids, and it's a tip again. And it seems often, doesn't it? This world seems so frustrating because we just seem like we're going round in circles. You deal with an issue only for another issue to rear its ugly head. And often, just like Solomon feels so frustrated with this world, often we feel like we're those little hamsters on a wheel. You know those, I don't know if you've got a hamster, I never did, but you've seen them. They've got a hamster on a wheel, and the hamster's running as fast as he possibly can, but he's going nowhere. And that's often our experience, isn't it? We're running at full pelt, we're working hard, we're toiling, and yet we wonder, I feel like I'm achieving nothing. And then, of course, ultimately we die. I don't want to be pessimistic, but that's the reality of life, isn't it? Although Solomon is viewing this world from under the sun, it doesn't mean that his observations are necessarily false. He's right in what he says. We live, we die, and we're forgotten. And because we live in this world, we cannot escape this cycle of being born, of living, and of dying. Now, if of course we were to leave it there, the Bible study would end on a reasonably pessimistic note, so I don't want to leave it there. Look at verse 10 again. Solomon asks, is there anything of which it may be said, this is new? Well, viewed from under the sun, there is nothing in this world which is new. History is just repeating itself, isn't it? And yet, of course, we're gathered here tonight to worship the God who has revealed himself. And actually, as we consider Solomon's ultimate frustration, which is the cycle of life and death, and it goes throughout the whole book of Ecclesiastes, as you read through it, again and again and again, Solomon keeps on coming back to the point, well, if you're going to die, it doesn't really matter what you do with your life. It doesn't matter how much you achieve. If you're going to die, then actually you might as well just try and make the best of life and enjoy it while you can. But we're gathered here tonight to worship the one who has broken the cycle of being born, living, and dying. Christ was born, he lived, he died, and then he broke the cycle. He rose again, and he lives forevermore. And as we think on that, and as we think of what Solomon is saying, and we question, what's Solomon's real problem here? This cycle of life and death, what's the real issue? Well, I think we can say, actually, Solomon's real issue is that he lives in a cursed world. He lives in a world which has been ruined by sin, and therefore, no matter what we do, we cannot escape the cycle of life and death, because the wages of sin is death, and this world has been ruined by sin. And yet Christ, who has risen again, has broken that cycle. And therefore, when we look at this question, see, is this new? Is there anything new in this world? Well, we can say, actually, yes, there has been. Christ has broken the cycle. He's risen again. And of course, as we think on that word new, well, that word carries an awful lot of meaning in Old Testament, in the New Testament, doesn't it? What is it that 2 Corinthians chapter 5 verse 17 says? It says that we have been made new creatures. We have been made new. Yes, we inhabit a cursed world. Yes, we live in these bodies ruined by sin, which will ultimately go to the grave. But actually, the New Testament tells us we have been made new. And therefore, if we have been made new, then our home is not this cursed world. Our home is not this at times frustrating and seemingly pointless life, is it? Our home is truly new. Solomon looked at this cursed world. He said, you can find nothing new. And he was right, really. But we have the real new thing. We have our homes in the new heavens and the new earth. Just turn with me, if you will, to the book of Revelation and chapter 21. Revelation 21, I just want to read the first four verses. Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death,
nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Solomon looks at a cursed world from an under-the-sun viewpoint, and he's utterly frustrated and sees the pointlessness of it all. And yet we, Christian friends, are not citizens of this cursed world ultimately. We live in it for a time, but we are citizens of the new heavens and the new earth. And as you look at those two things, you can see the difference. Solomon says, the cycle of life and death, it just goes round and round. A generation comes, a generation goes. No one lives forever. And yet look at the new heavens and the new earth. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying, nor pain, for the former things have passed away. So yeah, there's nothing new in this world. But we're heading for the new world. Now, as I thought about this afternoon, as I was thinking about what I was going to say, I was trying to wonder, how does this really help you go to work tomorrow, though? You know, having said what I said earlier on, this world is a painful, toilsome place. How does this help you go to work tomorrow? Well, I suppose there's a sense in which the simple truth is that we do endure this world for a time, don't we? And we live in it, experiencing the pain of this cursed world. And yet, we don't make this world our home, do we? We live in the light of the new world. We live knowing that we are citizens of glory. Think of Jacob when he had to work 7 years for Rachel. And it says, doesn't it, it was as but a few days. Well, do you think Jacob got home every night and never felt tired? Do you think he never once had a bad day? Well, of course he did, but all of that paled in comparison to his love for Rachel. And every day he worked, he knew he was a day nearer Rachel. Well, surely if this truth, that this world is not our home, and as we look at it, we see just what a ruined place it is, really. Yeah, we can see beauty in it and we can enjoy our lives, but actually the joy that we experience in life is only based on the fact that we're not citizens of this world. As we look at this world of all its painful toil, surely it should be making us look to glory. And not simply looking to glory, not just looking to heaven, but looking to Jesus. Because he is glory, isn't he? He is what makes glory what it is. And just like Jacob longed for Rachel, so we long for him. And we want to be with him. And therefore, as you go to work tomorrow, maybe it will be a hard day, maybe it will be a good day, maybe it will simply be a mundane day. But as you go to work tomorrow, if you're looking to him, and if you, with every hour, are aware of the fact that you are not a citizen of this cursed world, then surely, life in this cursed world will seem in a sense much more dim and much more black and white compared to the technicolour that's to come, compared to glory and being with Jesus. And that's what we're working for, isn't it? We're working towards him. And therefore we endure this cursed world for a time, knowing it's not our home. We'll leave it there. So a few scattered thoughts.